Good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and get started. We have relatively few items on our agenda, but I'm assuming at least one of them will take a little time. Actually, I'm going to take things a little bit out of order. I'm going to do item two first at the request of our city clerk, the discussion of city council county board meetings. And this is actually a very brief item that I wanted to bring up. In the next few weeks, I'll be sending out that we normally get our committee the whole meeting calendar. And what I'd like to do is share with you, the rest of the council, just all of the things that we've accomplished this past year. It's a pretty impressive list of items, but then that'll be kind of a precursor towards starting to set things up for 2016. One of the things we wanted to do, I know, is have some meetings with our county board friends. And you know, the calendar and the workload and such have just made that really difficult to do. Nevertheless, as we go forward, we're going to have additional opportunities where we need to work very closely together on transportation and some of those things. So as I chatted with Paul Wilson and Sheila Cascaden, we talk about what we should look for in next year's calendar. We're just going to go ahead and set up three or four of those. And they're not going to be these, I think anyone who's participated in the past discussion, they were almost too big to get your mind around. We had, you know, half a dozen topics, and they were all pretty big topics. So our thinking is we'll treat them more like study sessions as we go into 2016, have them a little more frequent, you know, three or maybe four times a year, but really keep it very focused, one topic, you know, one or two at most, and just try to have some good dialogue. We even talked about we'll maybe do it in lieu of a committee of the whole, for example. We could do one of those, or we might agree to do one between the morning and afternoon county board meeting. So that was my only attempt for today, just to kind of let you know that that's what I'm thinking. At least a couple of the county board members are on board with that, because I think we're going to need those discussions even more going forward. So unless there's any comment, that was just intended to be an informational item. They're thinking, they were talking tentatively 1-4, and like April, July, we were setting up the timing so it wouldn't conflict with the budget process for either group, and it might actually be helpful for our respective budget discussions. So we'll
talk. You're thinking about 1-1/4, is that what I hear?
Roughly.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll see how that works. All right. I know we're expecting one or two guests, but our next topic is the HPC, revised HPC language that we have. And I'd like to kick this off so that we maybe provide some parameters for this afternoon's discussion. Again, I'll remind everyone that we'll intend to have a public hearing at a future date. So this is just intended to be a little bit of discussion on what we've been sent and what we've read through so far. But what I wanted to do, and we'll let a couple of the folks from HPC speak, Jeff, if he chooses, as the chair, and Dave, as a member of the task force that came up with the language, so if they have some comments to share, we'll let them do that. But by way of introduction, I think we've all been down this path before to some degree, and I think it's going to be pretty easy to get knee-deep in the minutiae of the language with all the redline versions and so forth, and I don't know that we want to go there today. I think, and this is just my opinion, but I think as the policymakers, our time is going to be better spent at trying to address some of the very high-level questions. And I've got three questions that I think we could give some direction on. Number one, do we, as a community, feel that preservation of various aspects of our heritage is truly important for our community? I'm going to assume the answer is yes, but I still think it's a valid question, just to make sure to validate. Second question, I think, is where do we stand on the question of property rights? I think a lot of the language, a lot of the questions that are embedded in the ordinance follow on as far as how we answer that. Do you allow opt-in, opt-out? What's the nomination process? What's the council review process for demolition requests? But fundamentally, we have to kind of come to grips with where do we stand on that topic of property rights. And then finally, the third question I have, if we feel that preservation is important and we're willing, wish to mandate some level of compliance, then what, as a community, are we willing to provide in terms of resources? Again, a lot of follow-on questions come out of that, such as funding sources or processes, grants, all sorts of things. So, again, I think we need to kind of finally step up and say, do we support preservation for this community? Where are we at on property rights, and where are we at in terms of incentives or the sorts of resources that we might provide as a community if we indeed wish to support preservation? That's the tact I had in mind, and again, try to keep it at a high level because, again, as I was reading through the materials one more time, you know, we can debate the periods and the question marks, and we'll be here for hours, and I'm not sure that's the best use of our time. I'd be open to ideas or discussion or things that you'd like to accomplish this afternoon, but beyond that, I would ask for a couple of the representatives to maybe give us the highlights or things that they think we ought to focus on. But first, rest of the council, your thoughts.
I personally would like to hear from them, and then when they're done, that we hear what they did and why they did it, then we can have a discussion overall. I think it's kind of silly for us to do questioning or figured out talk between us and then ask them to come in afterwards since they were the ones who spent the time with us. I do agree with you, Randy, that we need to have some things discussed. I do appreciate the efforts of all the groups involved coming up with what they've done, but I do believe it's time for us to take this now and make some decisions as far as to how we're going to, if we're going to enact this. And that goes everywhere from deciding, there's a lot of discussion in here and the counter groups of discussion on what should have a public hearing, what should not. I think those are things that we're going to have to figure out. Again, the group did what they were asked to do. They've done a heck of a job working through a lot of stuff. But I think we should hear from them. And then after we're done hearing from them, then we should start to trying to see what we need to do and what we need to ask staff to do or our group to figure out how we're going to, if we're going to fund these programs.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? All right. So, Ms. Rallman, you want to lead off?
Sure. Did you have any standards that you care?
Sure. Oh, comfortable.
Because you're going to be here a lot. Yeah,
yeah. No. Thank you for hearing from us. I gave you a copy of my notes today, so you don't have to take such good notes. You can just listen if you choose. I believe this task force, so we had a commission, we stalled, we had some experts, we had city staff, we had county staff. We've been really working hard at this, and I do believe that this is the best document we can put together given the constraints that we had. We've been at it several years, and there's still some pretty divided factions. So I'm going to start at the bottom of the first page. I think we broke through some of those impasses. First, the task force and the whole HPC was unanimous in ratifying the draft. We all had paragraphs we would insert differently, but to actually get unanimity was pretty powerful. The city department heads had an opportunity to input. We had some language I'll come back to about how do you prioritize jurisdictional flexibility that with respect to zoning or building safety or fire marshals that they are allowed by code and they frequently do not exercise. And if you believe that that's important, you could weigh in on that. Fairly recently, the State Historic Preservation Office, which is a federal program that has a number of people in each state. I believe there's 11 in Minnesota. Has what they call a certified local government program. We did not adopt their model language, but ultimately prevailed on them to get certified local government status in this draft ordinance. It was a huge breakthrough, because that's the gold standard of you are or are not a preservationist in some people's mind once you're a certified local government. This list, this ordinance had two addenda where we listed both what we believe to be historic landmarks and potential historic landmarks. The historic landmark list was 11 National Historic Register properties that are in the city limits. Part of what was nice about that is each of those 11 had the owner petition at some point in the building's life to be on the National Historic Register, so it got past the opt-in, opt-out question. There's another 121 that were potential landmarks, and 130 houses that are contributing to the National Historic Register District in Phil Hill, and I'm not quite sure what you do with that. That's an awful lot of them, but we did winnow it down from the 542 that were on Will Stark's list of lists that we were really stuck on for a long time. We've had very little owner input up to now. The Preservation Commission, as you have it today, is a quasi-governmental commission. It's volunteers with some governmental duties, similar to planning and zoning. The ordinance describes some members' professional credentials, and this has again been contentious of is an architect or an engineer or a real estate broker equal to somebody who's got a history degree? I don't know. We put language in there that we describe as somebody who's got an enduring passion for this kind of work. And the Olmsted County History Center gets a seat if they want it. We struggled, as you know, with public hearings, what they call evidentiary standards. If you say something historic happened and somebody else says it didn't, how do you break it down? That's an evidentiary standard. And making pertinent recommendations. We had trouble being effective leverage for the council. And going forward, if you want us to continue doing that, I think we're amenable to it, but we could recraft some of our procedures for how to do that. Up to now, you got to hear the same public hearings we did with different information, and it made it undermined the process. All the parties, the Grow Rochester and the Conservancy, now believe that it takes some subsidy to get what we want out of these legacy buildings. 34 states have state tax programs. As a building owner, I think legacy buildings need some price support because otherwise they just become older buildings and they just continue to deteriorate. I went last week to the National Trust for Historic Preservation Convention in Washington. I learned a lot of good stuff, came back with some documents. North Carolina defers half of property taxes for people on their protected list. And if you choose to go off the list, you give back 3 years of that discount. I hadn't thought of that. That seems kind of interesting. Mississippi has one where they offer state tax credits, including non-income producing properties like personal residences for people that invest more than $5,000 in a single phase of work. So if you have a legacy building like a Pill Hill, for example, and you did the bathrooms and the kitchens over, you could conceivably qualify for state tax credits. We're trying to move ahead. The perquisites and the subsidies are not part of the ordinance, as we understand how ordinances are written. I'm a first timer, but I think it'll be an integral part of getting what you and the public want for these kinds of buildings. The opt-in, opt-out is a delicate issue. We did not resolve it with the extremes. I think it'll come to a split vote of some kind, but I think it'll be, my opinion is you'll know what to do. We came up with 16 potential sources of funds, revolving loan funds, in our opinion, are fairly small amounts of money for fairly short periods of time, and they can't buy you what you really want. So you need something with more zeros to it. And it'll be a mix of really big projects like the Chateau and really little projects like roof or windows or something like that. So it'll be some kind of a mixture. And I think if the HBC endures, which is, of course, up to you, we'd be willing to manage that process, but we need a little better work direction than we have today. So it'll take big and little projects on an ongoing basis. We're mixed. I've got some experience about it. Authorities having jurisdiction is a problem area. There's a whole host of government entities that have authority over these projects, and in my opinion, a lot of them can say no, and not all of them can say yes at the same time. So you get into Americans with Disabilities Act to get access to the building, and then the State Preservation Office telling you, being very rigorous about keeping it the way it originally was 100 years ago, and it's just a tilt. You can't do them both at once. And there's five or six of these entities. In the last page, I took a code page that describes some flexibility that these officials can have, and frequently don't, because they're under such fire all the time by people trying to walk up right up to the line of what is and isn't acceptable. Every one of these authorities having jurisdiction do their best every day, and they try to be even-handed, and it's really hard for them to be flexible about this stuff. Last thing, many of the challenges that our Preservation Commission has gone through are typical of what others have gone through. And so the guidelines are continue the kind of great staff support we've had, especially this last year. If we're good with our record keeping, if we have annual reports, if we have good meeting minutes, if we have the city attorney's office keeping us on the ball, we're a lot less likely to come up with inconsistent, arbitrary opinions and rules that can get overturned in court. We'll stay out of court if we do the same kind of thorough, rigorous process you do. In closing, this has been a really hard project. At one of the public hearings just recently, Kevin Lund said he'd been at it 33 years, and I started counting. I've only been 29 because that's when I came to town. But this is heartfelt, core values sort of things that are really hard to budge on. I believe this is the best ordinance we could get to consensus on, and I'm proud to be picked. Thank you. I want to also have special thanks to Dave Peterson and Aaron Beneke, who the three of us have been the executive committee of this group, where we try to widen our footprint a little bit so it's not all about one of us. Dave has done yeoman's duty and brought his legal talents and a lot of effort to this that none of the rest of us had to head that way. Aaron Reeves and Pat Alfredson have done a really great job to educate us amateur politicians on how to do this kind of work. Michael Koop from the SHPO office has been helpful and even-handed. Karen Finneman Killinger is an architect and a Mayo employee. Christine Schultz is here. She's also an architect. We had just an all-star cast of really educated, thoughtful, good citizens. So, your action items, as I saw it, first, when you get extreme activism, you have to keep it in perspective. And it's hard sometimes. You have to refine the process so the commission and the council don't do the same work over and over and get stuck on it. I think the community clearly values preservation, and it's a national issue. So somehow you have to put it into your priority mix of police and firemen and all the other things that are city services you have to do. But I think it's a pretty strong one. It should not be at the bottom of your list. And lastly, I think for no cost, you can emphasize with staff to flex to accommodate these projects when it's within their authority, and you should do that. Some of the funding source candidates, I just listed them. Make sure everybody knows a tax credit is a dollar-for-dollar reduction in income tax. So when you get a 20% credit, it's 20% of the cost of the project. It's more complicated than that. But these are really big numbers. So if you get a 20% state and a 20% federal, that's 40% of the cost of the project. And that's not enough to have people build these things. It takes more. Texas has an interesting policy. If you demolish without a permit a protected building, then they automatically delay your building permit a year. It's an interesting way to do it. I never heard of that. And we talked about a development coordinator. It didn't make it to the final draft. You have great staff, and some days we still miss Doug Knott. So, thank you. Do you have any questions?
Just a comment, and one thing that caught my eye, Jeff, is when you talked about SHPO ratifying this draft that allows us to achieve certified local government status. And I know that's something I've been aware of for a period of time. And I realize that it opens the door for some modest grants, but nevertheless, that's a big step, because that was a lot of the earlier discussion, and we couldn't quite get there, so.
Well, I would describe this, I mean, I'm a trained mediator, and Dave's got a lot of mediation skills, and this was a lot more of a mediation than a documentation sort of process.
Okay. Any questions for Jeff?
I just want to say thank you, Jeff. I attended many of your meetings, and I realized that there was definitely a divide between the groups. And I think
makes me think differently about ethics.
Yeah. I do think it's one of these things where you guys, with your work through the groups, have brought a long ways, and I thank you for that. Now I think it's the responsibility of this council to take the next step, whatever that may be. It's the responsibility of this group. And we definitely will not be referring this back to you or anybody else. We'll give you some other dancing orders for the HPC.
Okay. Mr. Hickey?
I just want to echo some of those comments. I just want to thank you very much for all your work. And it's been quite a long process. We gave you a very difficult task, and at times it was hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. So a few more steps to go here, but a tremendous amount of work got us to this point today, and I just want to thank you very much.
Mr. Campion.
I don't need to say thank you too many more times, so I'll skip that part, but obviously we're all appreciative of the efforts that went into this. One of the things that you said that still remains a little bit unclear, based on both the ordinance that's proposed and also maybe history, is how we will balance claims that are brought before us. Certainly, I don't think anyone on the council, at least over vocally, claims to be a historian. And how do we, you know, go forward with this idea that conflicting claims arise around the origins of a property and how that goes forward? And I appreciate your both candor and your willingness to kind of take some of that stuff on, because I think it is there's not always a whole bunch of people saying thank you for it, and I think we're going to have to work with the experts that we have within the city and outside the city, within the constituency.
I asked a lot of people about that in Washington, because it's kind of I agree with you. How do you vet the quality of the provenance, they call it, of Abraham Lincoln did or didn't sleep here? I think that's the kind of thing the commission could potentially do. Having a budget to hire an archivist would help some. I mean, that's how it's done. The State Preservation Office has a librarian that keeps some national records and also some National Historic Register. So I think when we come up on projects like the Conley House, we could have maybe done that better than district court did.
And I think that's our concern, and certainly looking at this in terms of the future and having to adjudicate some of these things that come before us. How do you...
As a practical matter, it's really hard to, if the owner says, do not enter my property, how do you do a good job of looking at the abstract and seeing whatever elements are there? It works much better if you can find a way that both the preservationist and the owner are both committed to the same goal.
I think we'd also discuss, you know, we will probably have to use a consultant in a number of these cases, because especially if it's a potential that wants to move up to a landmark status, or if it's, say, somebody that wants to remove a property from a landmark status, whatever it might be, the HPC and staff really aren't qualified for some of those decisions, so it's going to make sense for the city to use a consultant to either do, say, a phase two sort of review of it, or review the documentation to help verify those sort of things. So, and we'd also be requesting assistance from the State Historic Preservation Office as well.
And I realize that's a little bit more technical than we were hoping to get maybe at the moment, so I'll truncate that for now.
And I agree with what Mr. Campion is talking about. Taking it one step further, I think where it starts to get muddy is we can all agree that Lincoln slept here, but then what? Is it still something you wish to preserve as a community? Where does that rank if the same location is to be used for a very badly needed workforce housing project or something like that? That's where it starts to get really challenging for us as a community and placing kind of value judgments on things. So those are some of the challenges ahead.
Any other questions, Frank?
Yes.
Thank you. Jeff, and I'm trying to find it, but in there it talks about if a property owner opts out, they're out for 2 years.
Yes.
Can you explain that to me? Why? Why is it a 2 year?
We wanted there to be a disincentive. Pitch into here, Dave, if you want. what we wanted was carrots and sticks, I guess would be the way I describe it. I think ultimately this is going to be a subsidy situation to encourage behavior that you want from an owner of a property. A lot of places have demolition by neglect. They have accidental fires. A lot of places sit a really long time. I was at Mount Vernon in Washington yesterday. George Washington died in this bed, but that house was derelict and empty for 60 years. I didn't know that. So we have to find a way to get to them earlier and sooner, and in both big and little ways. Mayo's clearly the excellent property owner, in relative to me certainly, and I could always use a cleaner building or new storm windows or a roof 2 years sooner. And those are the kind of things that I think we're going to need. This ordinance only also deals with the exteriors, not the interiors. And the current National Park Service practice is to also think about interiors.
Mr. Hickey?
I think that answers my question.
Okay. Mr. Campion, do you have any questions?
No, I guess I'm going to reserve my question.
Okay.
I had a question. I'd like to say thanks to not only to the people that worked so hard on this for a couple years, but to the staff that allowed our city clerk to participate very actively in this process. So when I looked at it, I thought, oh, I think this is something Mr. City Attorney wrote. So that was very good. Thank you. But I give you credit. I just had a couple questions about the, like the Heritage Preservation Commission under B, you know, demonstrated interest and expertise may include, and you listed what it may include, but I would like something in there, if it were appropriate, to say, but it's not limited to those that you have listed. In case someone had a strong demonstrated interest, has demonstrated a strong interest, and yet they may not be included under some of the categories you listed.
We struggled with that. There were some credentialing, and also we're a fairly large town as towns go, and mayors trying to come up with designees to get into this kind of thing, or I mean, you only can pick from the ones that apply or that you can get to apply.
Are you opposed to having that inserted?
No.
Okay. That's something I think, just in case we don't know all the answers and we don't know what's going to come up, that gives an opportunity to consider someone who may not be in real estate or in economic development, etc. The other thing, I know that the Conservancy has been at your meetings, and I've heard a lot from them as well. And I know the commission has already been appointed, right? All the names on the commission has already been appointed, or not? On the Historic Preservation Commission, have the commissioners all been appointed?
There is in place a Historic Preservation Commission that the mayor nominated and folks approved.
It's been, it's starting its third year.
Third year.
The mayor selected.
I'm wondering in the future if we could consider, you said you wanted the Historic Society member one, and I wonder if in the future if you would consider two people from the conservatory, only because it's the integrated of different voices that I think is missing. And, they certainly have brought up many, many valuable points. And I've listened, I think we've all listened. But, I'm really about including those voices in the decision because they have many skills that they too would like to share. And maybe they had input into this as well. I'm not saying they have not. Maybe they've influenced some of the writing.
Would you like me to answer that? I can answer that.
Sure, go ahead.
The council and the commission has asked a number of times just who is the conservancy, and they came up with 11 frequent attendees, a number of whom are here today. The Grow Rochester group was 1,500 Chamber of Commerce and 800 realtors and the whole Rochester area builders. I mean, they're both heartfelt groups. It's just who as recently as when Karen joined us a couple months ago, the mayor selects. I wasn't privy to his list.
I appreciate that. I think it's something I'll continue to talk about, though, is having those different voices so we can really come out with the very best outcome for the people.
On the task force, we tried to do that. Actually, it's my idea to break into a smaller, less formal group. So there were three commissioned, one person we considered a conservancy person, and one male person, and one from SHPO. And that's how we ultimately resolved it, but it still took 6 months.
I did read someplace about, you know, some comments about the conservancy, and yes, like I said, I'll continue to speak about including different voices, even though they may not be all in sync, but ultimately I think we might come out with something that would be best for in the public's interest. But I just said, would you want me to go through some questions that I had as I look through this, or not?
If that's what you want to do, again, I was hoping to keep this more high level, because we're gonna tackle this at an evening meeting. And I'd look for counsel from the rest of the members here. How do you want to relay your individual comments to Mr. Peterson or Jeff? Because quite frankly, I get confused. We've got probably three or four versions now that we received, and I'm sitting here trying to compare the documents, and I get lost. I don't know who agrees to what. So I don't know how to. I'm looking for some guidance here. What is the best way to convey our individual comments to?
I'll quick try to provide a little background. The clean version, the first one you have, is basically what the HPC, the task force put together, the HPC reviewed and made some minor changes to, and then that's what they passed along to council. The other versions that you have in there were the comments basically submitted by either the Conservancy or Grow Rochester. I also included some written comments that were submitted by one of the HPC board members as well to the task force. So I don't think the request isn't necessarily the try to do a comparison of all three. The task force did that. The HPC did do that. They didn't include, obviously, all the changes requested by either group. If we did, I'm not sure that would be a workable ordinance in the least, as they can be contradictory and
just
very different. So it would not really work out that way. So the task force and then ultimately the HPC did the best they could to try to take comments received and their... As a commission, their ideas incorporated into the ordinance that they presented, which I said is that first clean draft ordinance that's in there. In addition to that, at various times in the process, I did throw the current drafts that we had going around to department heads, but also note that since this last version has come out, I have met with Mitzi and Planning. I've asked Terry to review it. There are definitely some cleanup things that will have to happen to this draft. And really, they're not affecting the intent of the ordinance at all, or the intent of what the HPC wanted to see with it. They're just clarifications. They're cleaning up some issues. I mean, as a task force, we had so many versions going that we honestly did miss a few places where we had an item here, and then 3 pages later, something else that didn't quite line up. So we have some things that we do want to address that way. So I think that ultimately, before you guys have this at a public hearing, we will do some cleanup things from Terry's comments, from Mitzi's comments that will help, I think, make the ordinance much clearer. We'll address possibly some things that Terry thinks that are probably maybe not quite legal that we need to clean out. Those sort of things. So we will have a final version that I think is what the council should ultimately consider at a hearing, but with the full understanding that the intent of that final version is not anything different than what the task force and the HPC approved. We're not touching the big picture items. We're cleaning up the details
and
that.
And again, I might be oversimplifying, but I'd love to get to a public hearing where we have one document in front of us. Now, you can comment for or against or whatever, but we've seen it in some of our development proposals. When we start to get multiple versions with red lines and so forth, they can get really confusing. Mr. Hickey, then Ms. Mead.
I'm going to finish this, please. I think it's real important that we have dates so that we'll know which is the next version. And if it's a draft, I think we should have drafts stepped across it with the date. Because I looked through, and I got in late last night, and I looked at it before I left for my conference. But, I'm not sure which came first. So I think in the future we should date our material.
Well, like I said, what I tried to do was just include the HPC recommended version and then the comments received. So that's it, nothing else. I mean, I could provide 10 working drafts that the task force used, but we tried to stick with, here's what the HPC recommended, and here's the comments we received, because we only felt it was fair that the council see the comments that we received from the outside groups as part of how we got to this final version.
I stick with that recommendation date.
But, oh, yeah, I'll definitely do that for a future if we have multiple ones. But that's as far as what we have now.
Thank you.
Mr. Hickey?
So, yeah, I understand what you're trying to do. I appreciate that. So we've got the clean copy. Then you show the copies with the input and the strike-throughs just to show us where that discussion came from and where that input. So I would say, I mean, what I would like to see is, you know, I think this is an appropriate level of detail for today's discussion. We've talked about maybe keeping it at a higher level. And then when we get the final version that's had some staff cleanup and the city attorney good hard look, send that draft around. And then depending on the level of changes suggested by the council, if there's minor changes, then perhaps we just can address it in the final meeting in the evening. But if there's significant markup changes on that final draft, then we might have to bring it back together for a COW meeting to do some significant rework.
Yeah, I'm...
No, that's it.
I was going to say, I'm 100% supportive of going forward. If we get into a council meeting where we're changing the text, bringing it back to make sure we know what we got, because undoing those problems takes a lot of manpower to go through and figure out what was intended to be going on. I enumerated about a dozen what I think are more technical questions about different aspects of the ordinance. I think specifically high level questions I have, maybe still for Jeff, is we all acknowledge that this is not free. Can someone, has the HBC put any effort into putting some bookends on what kind of money we're talking about to start an effective process here? And do you guys look to us to figure out the dollar amount, or is there other communities we can lean on to figure out how they're funding their process? Because ultimately, if you come back and you say it's $15 million, yeah, that's one size. If you come back and say it's $50,000, those are two very different numbers. I think we have to figure out what we're in the neighborhood of. I think it brought up a ton of valuable points, and that's more rhetoric than something you have to address today. There's a ton of valuable points here about, you know, what's unreasonable, what's economic duress, what's economic hardship, you know, this opt-in, opt-out, these timeouts, these cool-downs, when can things be appealed? I had a lot of technical questions, and I think, in my mind, unfortunately, the amalgamation of the technical questions becomes somewhat of a big question about, you know, moving forward. I think I'd like to see more clear procedural work that maybe our attorney could work through to make sure that all the processes about when it goes from one phase to another, when someone disputes one thing, when they decide they want to come back. I don't really like the two-year cooldowns. I'd like people to be able to come back and talk to us about circumventing that, and maybe that's a different process. But I would rather feed these to maybe get some responses instead of trying to cover them all today, because this will be here until...
I mean, the last thing we want to do is get into a line-by-line.
Well, you've got conditional use permits and exemptions, and you still have those rights. And then back to Sandra, we had a public hearing, and we heard everyone who wanted to speak. And by the time we got done with the hearing and the commission, it was a unanimous vote. Now, not everybody from the audience got their say or got their input incorporated into the final draft, but everyone who had their say, it actually was an orderly, thoughtful meeting.
Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, so back to the point I made before, I think we all have our comments on the draft we saw, and I think perhaps if we wait to get that cleaned up version that may address some of these points, there might be less to work on. And I think that at that point, then the decision point is this something we can clean up, you know, and send forward to a final meeting, or do we have to have another call? And I think we'll know more once we see that city attorney approved draft.
Well, I think the HPC, you've seen some of the marked up, you've seen the marked up version from the Conservancy. Sounds like there's another constituency here to hear from some changes that we have. But where do we funnel those so that you can hopefully come up with this close to final version? Is it Dave? Is it you as the HPC? Where does Sandra send her comment? Where should Nick send his comments?
So I guess my question is, are we ready for that? Because my point being, this This document wasn't produced and run through the city attorney's office, and I know they said there's some staff input. I'm saying I don't think we're ready for council input yet, is my opinion, until we get this cleaned up version, which may address some of these points. Maybe half of Sandra's concerns go away. It might be premature to start marking up the markup copy, is my thought.
I would agree. You're not ready. You're not there yet.
Right. And that's great. My entire points, I think, are really focused on quantifying the different conditions, the different state machine, the different process can move through. So if I would support moving this onto the city attorney and having the city clerk maybe work together to get us a final draft version where I can comment really pointedly on.
Mr. Bilderbeck?
And I think I agree with what you're saying, Nick, but I think, unfortunately, we could ask Jeff and Dave and the committee to give us an idea, and they can give us an idea this big, and that ain't going to help us. I think what we need to do as a council is to give direction to city staff to say, if we were going to put X amount of dollars in a pot, and what are some of the ways that we might be able to do that? Would they be grants? Would they be loans? If they're loans, would they come back low-interest loans? That's the kind of stuff I think that nobody else but us can kind of sit with our staff and figure that direction out. I think it's unfair to ask. The HPC went through enough.
Well, the truth is fragile, and we have consensus today, and it's time to bang the gavel and run.
Yeah. I really feel that it's our responsibility to try to figure out how we want to do that. And that's something we need to and figure out.
You're right. I'm information gathering more than asking people to render official support. I mean, I think that's a critical question here is the other cities have done this. We were just in Nashville. I got to tour a historic train yard that got turned into a technology center. I mean, there are fantastic things that can happen here. So I think we should look at this as an opportunity to look at some of those great things. But we have to put a price tag on everything we do, and we have to make sure it fits the priorities of the people who want it. So
more communities collaborate than fight. And there's a lot of good models in Cleveland and Detroit and Cincinnati and Denver, the major urban reconstruction.
And I think all of us that were in Nashville saw some great projects. We also saw some holes in the walls that should be torn off. But even listening about the Ryman Auditorium, about how that basically saved downtown Nashville and by bringing it back and what that's done after that sat empty for 30 years. But I really think we're at a position where we need to work with staff. We need to use our expertise from the city attorney's office to help us craft some of these things, as well as from city administration. We talk about financing and from Dale. And we need to start trying to work that through. We're no way ready to bring this forward.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's other questions that we need to start. Stephen, they've done what they've done. They did a good job. The groups that came presented, the groups that listened, it was very difficult sometimes for both sides, and yet they got through and got us to this point. I think now it's our responsibility to take it from here and craft it, finish it off, and then move it forward.
I would agree with the sentiment that it's premature for us to comment, because I'm not sure which version we would comment on. There's two in our packet today, and then we received another one by email with some textual comments. So we need a cleaned up version.
I should tell you now, there will have to be two separate ordinances. There's an attempt to amend the zoning ordinance in several regards. For example, there's a provision that states, and I hate to get into the weeds here, but you need to know there's going to be two separate ordinances. There's an attempt here to indicate that the Zoning Board of Appeals and the Planning and Zoning Commission cannot act on a variance request without the commission's approval. You can only do that by amending the zoning ordinance, the beloved Land Development Manual. And so those matters have to be taken care of in a separate ordinance that goes through the typical zoning ordinance amendment process. Everything else will be taken care of through the basic historic preservation ordinance. So when you see two separate drafts, that's why.
And it should be commented too, the planning is also working on it. It is mentioned in this ordinance incentives, and one of those incentives will be consensus in land development manual related to heritage preservation. And I've been working with John Harper and Mitzi a little bit, and they're reviewing. We actually had that wording in the original ordinance. We pulled it out to include it where it should go, which is land development manual. So I'm assuming that that part of it will also, you know, be an ordinance amendment that will have to happen when they talk about any sort of zoning incentives that might want to be considered for these properties.
Ms. Means, you've been waiting a while. Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment. You know, when I came to the meeting, I wasn't quite sure what to expect because there's a lot to cover, and that's been clarified. And I think you'll have an opportunity to individually express what we have read and whatever comments we got. Perfectly fine with that. I looked just briefly on the internet this morning, and the website referenced someplace among these papers, but it referenced a mission statement. And the mission statement was to preserve the nation's heritage for future generations through innovative leadership, education, and programs. And that was found under heritagepreservation.org. It's one of them. And one of the things that, you know, we've talked about, and I don't know that we certainly haven't gotten any consensus on whether or not it's even something that is of value, but to me, a mission statement is real important. And in your document, you mentioned goals, I think, that you wanted to accomplish. So vision, you know, mission, goals, and measurements, and I'll continue to say that I think those are important in all the things that we do. And I hope that that will be considered, because if you don't have, you know, a mission statement out there in front, it just says, okay, am I aligned with this mission statement? Does the mission statement align with the vision that we've identified? For me, it's just a template for working. So I hope that that will be considered. Possibly.
I have to respond. In the ordinance world, we call those public purpose statements, legislative intent. I'm a big believer in making those part of the ordinance. It's amazing to me the number of times cities have prevailed and have lost in court because they did or did not have that. They do have one on page one of the ordinance, and you may wish to add to it or subtract from it, but there is indeed a statement of legislative intent already in there.
What's it called, public purpose?
Well, they call it public policy and purpose, a declaration of public policy and purpose on page one.
Maybe that's why I've not gotten a response. I wasn't using the right term. So thank you for that clarification. I'd like to see this public policy and purpose statement in this document and considered for future work.
There's a lot of things we've thrown out here, and I want to see this continue to move forward. So is this something that would, how are we going to make sure this move forward? Are we going to try to put a task force of city council members and staff together? Are we going to let staff do it? Who's going to be pushing this forward?
Well, I think speaking from my perspective from the staff, I think our job is to not change the intent of what you've gotten from a committee, but to look at the legal issues and the ordinance issues in this and come back with a document that cleans those up and gives you a clean copy of that and a redlined copy of that. We can't prejudge or anything what you might do with the other comments you receive. So that's one thing. That's the first thing. The second thing is if you've asked for funding sources, that's Steve's bailiwick primarily. I mean, with some input from some others, but that's where usually, it's a budgetary matter. And so from my perspective, I think that's where we would go as we try and, on the staff level, get the input from the different departments. There's been some of that already, as Aaron has indicated. A lot of it is legal issues at this point. So we give you a redraft that doesn't change the intent of what they provided to you from the HPC.
And that's fine. I just wanted to make sure we have somebody identified that's going to be the responsible party so we know.
We've all worked together on this already. We'll continue to do so.
Okay.
Okay.
Ms. Means?
The financing piece. We'd be anxious to hear about what direction you give us in that or what your recommendations are. But those grants, how likely are there that we can start applying for grants so that we could have some money? Or do you have to have something very specific for the grants?
Well, we got stuck on some of those. We need work direction. would you offer the same subsidies to non-property tax-paying entities as you would a tax-paying entity?
In our looking at this in the past, our staff didn't identify a lot of large grants. You know, I mean, there's smaller grants out there. And, in fact, when we looked at it, and Jeff and his folks can correct me if I'm wrong, we didn't find a lot of communities that put community money into this. So basically, in the past, I think the council has discussed on a preliminary basis, you know, providing some fund of city funding in some way that might be used. But there isn't, to the best of my understanding, a lot of cities that are actually providing a lot of funding other than what is in the tax credits and some of those things. There are some smaller state grants, but you might be on your own on a lot of those incentives, so you need to think about, you know, where we provide those for.
Right, and that's something I've suggested earlier, that we might treat it somewhat like we do our housing rehab fund. You know, we fund it initially, but then there are grants with a payback, you know, reimbursement strategies and so forth. That's just one way of possibly dealing with this, Mr. Quindle.
If I'm going to eventually provide some funding source for any monies that the commission may recommend they have and you determine, that, then I would need to know somewhat what would the commission recommend and then at what level would you probably support through various means that I could take and make a recommendation. And I would have a hard time coming up with a recommended amount all by myself. So I would sure depend upon the commission or rely upon the commission to provide what they think may be some reasonable amount of money.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have a lot of control over state, federal, you know, grants and funding revenue options, but I agree. It would be good to have at least a number for discussion purposes. Is it 15 million? Is it 50 million? Whatever. Then
it's not 15 million.
Well, it could well be. I mean, if you're really going to proceed with the chateau, and it's going to take some adaptive reuse, that's a really big number.
I'm sure the chateau renovation will be a big number, but that funding source is already determined and limited. And you won't be able to use those monies for what they're talking about.
I think we're talking more modest.
I think we're
kind of like our facade.
At least hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's going to be a special services district. It's going to be TIF projects on historic properties. Maybe get a bigger percent of TIF than a new construction project. It'll be that kind of thing. And it'll be evolutionary case by case.
But I think our two strategies will be something like the rehab program, some sort of seed money and a reimbursement, or some sort of tax forgiveness program, you know, property tax or something of that nature.
And any tax forgiveness program, of course, needs state legislative action.
Right. Right. Ms. Beaton?
I did notice that CDBG was mentioned in the draft, and I personally think our CD, we need it for the HRA, we need it to support our housing, and I hope that we won't tap into that to contribute towards the heritage preservation.
Okay.
Question, please. This wasn't addressed, and for those of us who are going to be tasked with trying to put this in proper ordinance adoption form, is it the intent that the current HPC will become the new HPC? That, in other words, we're not going to have a sunset of those members who are on the commission today, and when this ordinance takes effect, there will not be a set of new appointments. Instead, the folks there will continue with the terms of office that they have.
I see everyone shaking their head yes on
this. Okay.
Well, I would say that, but we have staggered 3-year terms. Some are going off.
Well, my point is this. There's nothing in here that tells us that on page 2.
We're not going to scratch and start over.
Right. There's nothing that tells me what do I do with the people who are there now.
That was not the intent.
Okay. That's all I needed. I'll put in the right language.
We specifically discussed that in our task force. Anticipated that.
Yeah. I'll simply grandfather the current incumbents, and I'll put language into that effect.
Campion.
Not to delay moving on any longer, but the one piece that seemed particular needs particular polish is the economic hardship when I read over it, so I'd be...
Well, the problem is, as Gary pointed out, we're not in a position to refine what the HPC did. We're going to give you what they've given you, but we're going to make some legal changes that need to be made, and then you folks can decide whether you need further refinement of those types of terms.
Okay.
I'm not comfortable making
well,
that type of
comment. If I could comment on economic hardship, I mean, basically it comes from an existing ordinance that is used often, and it also mirrors what the National Trust provides as far as a guidance memo on how ordinances should include economic hardship, how they should review it. So we basically took the national standard and existing ordinance language, and that's how we crafted this one.
I think, yeah, perfect. That's
and fine. I'll provide those documents too as part of it in the future.
Well, it's just if the term is not defined within our ordinance, we don't refer to national standard language, we refer to the dictionary, right?
Correct.
So at some point, we have to, you know, undue economic hardship. You know, what is that, or where are we referencing in our book that says this is the qualification? Otherwise, honestly, we'll be right back where we are. This will be, you know, so going forward, I'll be interested to see what you guys come up with, but pay attention to see if that is defined elsewhere, because if we're going by the dictionary, there's a lot of dictionaries and there's a lot of interpretations of the dictionary.
Although sometimes, I don't know that we can completely avoid that. We see that now, people that request, you know, waiver of fees and so forth because of the undue burden. And we make a judgment call. Ms. Means.
Just to make sure I have this correct, the language for definitions that you've identified follows the SHPO recommended language. Is that correct?
Well, we have the world expert here too. I would say generally yes. What we did was we looked at a number of other ordinances. I spent a whole day last week in the National Association of Preservation Commissions, and there's a ton of build-on efforts has gone on rather than trying to create from scratch. So I believe we have embodied the language, and we're also first-time law writers, so we're happy to get some coaching.
So where we're at now is we're going to be, if I understand clearly, we're going to be asking staff to take a look at what HPC has provided, and they will run through that one more time and clean it up primarily from a legal standpoint. Any misnomers there, and then we'll see a version.
If you could tell us just today that we've approximated a target, this is about the right number of properties, this is about the right way to treat them. If at some point in the course of your public hearings, if you can say we're in the neighborhood, we can be more helpful.
The problem I have with that request is the matter might come before you in a quasi-judicial setting, and I'd hate to see that you've already prejudged the list in advance.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if the list is right or wrong.
Good advice.
I don't feel qualified necessarily to make that judgment, at least with the information I have. All right. So we've got the immediate next steps, and then then what would come to the council at that point? Just a single version, a red line version? Or
I would hope that I would be able to put it into the traditional ordinance format that you're used to seeing.
Okay.
Obviously, this is not that format, but I understand why it's not.
Agreed.
And so I will take this with the comments from the other staff members I'll be working with and actually put it into an ordinance format. And then you'll be given that copy from us and that copy alone, and then you folks can decide whether it's time to go through it line by line.
All right, perfect.
And I think at that point we have a decision. If there's minor changes, then perhaps we don't need another COW. If there's significant changes, we probably need to reconvene here in this format and go through it.
All right. Does that make sense to people? We'll see the cleaned up version. If you got a lot of changes, we'll reconvene at the COW. They're fairly inconsequential. We'll bring it forward and address it in the public hearing.
Okay.
If you tell us what resources you want, we can convene the whole commission, we can convene the six-member panel, tell us what you need, we'll try to help.
But he's talking about later down the line,
oh,
I think.
Okay.
But for the immediate time, yep. No, we don't need the HPC's correct. Involvement in what we're about to do.
I still would like to lead to HPC involvement in the type of the volume or money, the amount of money they think may be needed.
Or I'd support that.
For your determination and then seeing where you might get it.
Okay.
That sounds.
Now, are you going to determine whether it's consequential changes or not? That when you so any of you can then ask it, bring it back once you get Terry's version, you'll decide by yourselves whether or not you wish to bring it back here?
I think we'll have to make that judgment call based on the changes. I mean,
okay.
We'll get a sense of whether they're substantial or not. One of the, I'm trying to get to some of the core questions. So we're going to see this version in a packet, a future packet. So we'll have this draft language in front of us. And then, you know, how do we corral the inevitable 1, 2, or 3 red line versions we get in an email? I mean, I'd like some idea, some strategy for how we're going to corral this so we just don't lead to more confusion. I think everything comes.
What Sandra said, I mean, if you put a date in the document name, I think that goes a long way to know supplemented by A, B, C, D as required if you've got multiple drafts. So I think date goes a long way.
My draft will be labeled with date and city council version 1, something like that on the face. But what you're asking, I think, is you're still going to get emails saying.
Let me give a real simple example. I think the Grow Rochester gave us a kind of a marked up version where they replaced the word with development coordinator. All right, so now we've got, maybe that's the only change between the two versions. When do we reconcile those? And it would be great if that was the only change, but there's probably going to be more changes. And that's where it starts to get confusing if you've got, you know, your version and then another 1 or 2 redline versions.
So I was going to say, so that kind of gets back to who's maintaining the doc. So I think the city attorney is going to clean it up legally. I don't know if Aaron's going to kind of shepherd version control after that. I would see he's been the point man on this.
That's Steve's piece too.
Well, you'll get a version from Terry. That should be your version. Unless you want to do something else, that's your version.
And
maybe you don't make any more changes than that.
Right. Well, and I understand that. I'm just thinking realistically, we're probably going to get some other redline version.
Well, then you should have. You should put the name on top of what group is giving you those redline versions.
And I understand that as well. But where do those get reconciled? Are we going
to
reconcile?
I guess you'll have to look at them and decide if you want to add or make any changes based on those. Only you guys.
I think that's
that,
where
so
we, the council, work. We get all these other changes and we look at them and we think are significant and that they have an impact. That's where we're going to have the input to say. I guess we're going to bring this back to a COW meeting and discuss these and figure out, do we want that? Do we not want that?
I'll be very honest with you. You're coming back to a COW meeting.
Yeah. Thank you, Terry. Well, I think that makes sense.
I mean, I'll give an example. And I hate to do this. I'm going into the weeds. The way this thing is written now, there was no public hearing when you have an appeal before the city council. And that's the only time I know of it in city government. Where the council is an appellate body and there is no public hearing before you. And I have a feeling you may want to talk about that.
Well, some of those things aren't intended.
Those are your committee, that's your committee of the whole.
You know, and I can tell you that some of that stuff, when we clean it up, because when I met with Mitzi, I was able to clean some stuff up. I know what the intent was because I was in on all those meetings. We just didn't work right. Or our copy and paste from a different ordinance didn't quite clarify that point. But like I said, the HPC is not going to argue with the fact that, yeah, it should be a public hearing. So they have no, you know, that change isn't going to be something. So yeah, that's true. We'll be able to clean those up.
I'm not going to belabor the point, but I think having talked with Aaron previously, it sounds like we have a document system that's capable of doing the versioning. This is a really common problem across a number of fields about how you version different things and see redline version changes. I think we have to look seriously, because if we're going to start, and I think it's a good step for us to start getting to the point where we're, you know, iterating on legislation instead of, you know, kicking it back to staff. Staff, bring us another version. you know, we can start getting some of those changes going. We can start, here's the language I was thinking, can you take a look at these changes? There are systems out there that do this. This isn't rocket science. So I think, you know, I know the city clerk is looking at some stuff in that area. I think we have to be serious now about managing these versions better, because we get beat up when these versions get lost, and I don't want to get beat up again about it, and I know none of you guys do either. So I think it's a very valid point you brought up, and I think we should take it seriously about how we move forward. So,
Mr. Bellman. And I think too, just to add on to that, I agree with Nick, but also just what we heard Terry speak to about list, what is, what isn't, the appeal process. You know, even with the good intent that they may have gone into it, and the HBC came up with this, it may not quite fit the legal definition, or we need to make sure the appeals and things aren't. And those are going to be big things, because there are going to be things that, as they age, fit into this, and maybe even some of the definitions of what do you have to have to become a historic property. And I think that stuff we're going to have to wait for Terry to flesh out for us. When he goes through it, he'll be able to tell us if there's things with good intent that may not equal up, match up to where we need to be. And so we'll have to wait for them to come back. But I do agree that it needs to be dated and stamped. And any comments that are given or thought of, once we get that draft, we'll start pecking through. And
I agree. The document management version control, that's more of a logistical thing. That's easy. I guess one thing I'd be interested in hearing from the council, though, is a bit more from a philosophical standpoint. And this is the property rights issue. For properties that want to opt in, that's relatively easy. I want to play, and I want to get funding and so forth. But I'm curious where the rest of the council is thinking. What about those properties that don't want to play? I don't want to be part of the program. What do we feel about that?
Yeah, so I think the HBC tried to capture the flavor of that. I think, I mean, the way this is written, the way I read it, and with opt-in and opt-out, it only works if there's financial incentives to opt-in. Because otherwise, why wouldn't you opt-out to preserve all your options? And I think that that's what their thought was in the two-year period. So you're going to say, I'm going to opt-out of these financial incentives because I think I can do better.
I've seen Jeff shaking his head this way and Dave going the other way.
Oh, really?
I need to sit up here.
No,
you can.
I might just give you a high level of kind of how I see the ordinance working. We had all these discussions in the task force. So on one end of the spectrum, we had, you know, an ordinance, and I'm going back to the inception of the current HPC. What you had was an ordinance that was take all of, you know, 300 to 600 properties, whatever it is, and it's all mandated. To the other side on the spectrum was no, completely opt-in. What we did here was take a look at it and say, where is the middle ground? Well, rather than look at it as a group, this ordinance actually allows you to look at individual properties and say, the landmark is basically mandated, okay? So if you decide these are, the operative language in here is, you know, so historic and so important to the historic fabric of the city that we must mandate, then they're in there. You do not have to fund them. I saw some commentary earlier that says, oh, no, you have to fund those. And that's actually not true. It says that you should take into account available resources. But if you want to designate a property, you can do that. The potential are those that may want in on their own, or you may decide later on to put them in, or they may want out on their own. The idea there being, well, we had quite a bit of discussion on, should those properties have available resources? And the thinking there, and there was a lot of discussion on this, was, let's not tie your hands. Let's allow the city to give different, maybe levels of incentives, depending on the property. Maybe it's incentive-based. Maybe it's a 10-year, you know, restrictive easement that the property owner is willing to enter into, but is not interested in perpetual mandate. So we're trying to equip you with more tools so you can look at properties on an individual basis, and that'll help answer the question of funding, I think, as well. So I think, you know, the question was, well, is this an opt-in, opt-out? And one commentator referred to it as toothless tiger. That's not true. There is absolutely full tiger if you want to put that on 500 properties. You have the option for resources to do that. So individualizing, though, the decisions on the properties is what we're trying to do, the tools to do.
Mr. Allman.
I agree with what's said. As someone who's been in the trenches for a number of years with this, If you do too many more versions, you could potentially unravel the truce that we've got put together here. I mean, you're the council and you're the elected body, but I don't know that we can be much more help to you.
And I wasn't asking for that. That's why I started by saying it's kind of a philosophical question. Even though we've got landmark property, and I understood that rationale, but what do we do if the, if one of those landmark properties comes to a property owner and comes to us and says, I don't care, I don't want to play. It's my property, I don't want to play. And I'll forego all those demands on the end. So what? Those are the, and this is kind of a rhetorical question, but those are the inevitable ones we're going to get.
Yeah, we'll save that discussion for next time.
So correct me if I'm wrong, there's basically a review process that would let us then take a property and make it into a landmark later, correct?
Yes, there's an application that would go in.
And is it at the council or the landowner's behalf?
The council, the landowner, or I think what we've written is the HPC, the commission could initiate that.
If you didn't change your name, those three.
Right.
Either the property
so an interested party can petition the commission.
Or the council.
Right. So we could basically, if something came like that, we would have to, and we were all in, or someone was in agreement, we could make that motion. And, okay.
Okay. All right. I think we've given direction. We have as far as the next immediate step, as far as the cleaned up version.
So I'm guessing we're not going to see this on the 16th.
No, you will not.
And then we'll have a chance to comment. Others will probably comment, and depending on the magnitude of those comments, we will probably come back to another town.
Pretty safe.
And I'd like to have the financing options available at the same time and take a look at this. Because I think
it would be good to have some
Ms. Will the public hearings be in your review?
What I will do is once it's done and I send it out to you, then I'll wait for direction from you as to what you want to do next. And more likely than not, you will set this on for a committee of the whole meeting.
So it will not be in public hearing?
Not at that stage.
No. I would guess what you're going to give us a document, and then we put it out there for a period of 30 days, let people make their comments like council members, and then get some sense of the comments all over the board. We got to bring it back to the cow, or if they're relatively minor, we go forward.
Right.
But put some timeline on it. You know, 30 days, here it is. Here's what we're going to look at, and let people take a look at it.
I'm okay just saying let's bring it back. Just let's bring it back. I don't know. We don't need to leave much room. The major concern I have is if if it just shows up on a city council meeting and people thought it was going to come back here, I would say let's just eliminate all of
it. I agree. It's going to come back to the council.
Okay.
But there's got to be some point, period of time to allow people to react to what Terry produces.
Make it available. When you're done, just make it available. You can do that?
I would rather just give it right, bring it back to you folks first.
Perfect.
Okay.
Problem solved.
All right. Okay. Perfect. Any other comments on that or any other items?
I sent you an email about a dispute we're having over the arbitration of a excess land conveyance or decision by the city not to convey excess land. And I like consensus to go ahead and seek a court order to prevent the arbitration in that matter.
100% agree.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
You're with you. All right. Anything else?
Andy?
Yes.
Just a point of information. You know, it's somewhat related to some of the discussion here today. On December 7th, we will actually be holding the county EDA will be holding a public hearing to establish a tax increment district on the Conley and Moss building downtown. I think you know, I've tried to keep the council updated on that. You know, for some time, they did submit their request, and the TIF plan has been prepared by the city's TIF legal counsel, and so we provided notice to the county and the school district as required the other day, so that will be on your December 7th agenda. This happens to be one of those probably somewhat rare instances in which tax increment financing could work on a renovation project, so So, and since we didn't have these other financing tools in place that are being contemplated, this was a mechanism to bring this project forward.
Okay. We'll wait for that.
Yeah.
All right, anything else for this afternoon?
Mark, just for 2 minutes. I'll just slide over this side.